These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
We were hanging on. Goaltender kept us in there. Obviously, Cam was great. But we could, seriously didn't have to reinforce anything. That's what they do. They go about their business. They're calm. They're vocal. They communicate. They stuck together, and we were fortunate to catch a break at the end.
It's happening. It's happening.
That's right. The sweet taste of unexpected sports success carries into game one, boys. Breathe it in. Breathe it in here. A lot of failure in Minnesota sports recently, and if for only one night or one afternoon yesterday, we can drink it in.
Let's say drink it in. That
Minnesota
sounds more
sports.
That sounds more
Declan's
on par
weekend up north.
Yeah,
that's yeah.
You drank it in. Can't remember a thing now, but you certainly drank it all in.
That's right.
I love how we literally just, we'll get to statements here. We literally just broke the news to Declan before cracking the mics that Miguel Sano hit a game-winning three-run bomb. He's like, yeah, I was 19
I've been
seltzers
there.
In at a bachelor party.
Yeah.
I have
you know
no
what,
idea.
Though? We've all been there. Like, we can laugh, but we've all been there. We're like, what happened on Saturday? Oh, that's awesome.
And then you have to sort of like, you have to clear the cobwebs. Wait, who hit a home run?
Yeah.
Miguel Sano hit a home run?
Yep.
No memory.
What's happening here? All right, boys, Mackie and Judd, and we give you statements every single Monday, and there are a lot of things to make statements about that we're going to get to. Powered by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated's been helping business owners in the Twin Cities for over 100 years. Based in Owatonna, they're one of us. They're Minnesota sports fans, and they help your business with risk management tools and protection and peace of mind. Find out about all the industries Federated protects and find out how MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources, can help your business. Federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
There it is.
Let's fire up statements. And if he may, the Hockey Whisperer. You guys got your hour yesterday to do Judd's Hockey Show.
No one's going to hold the Whisperer down. Don't even ask, Whisperer.
Nope.
You guys got an hour, and you can find it, by the way, it's blowing up on the Score North YouTube channel right now, the immediate reaction from you guys.
When the Whisperer speaks, the fans nod down. Exactly right. What's that, Whisperer? What? Okay. Say it again.
Yeah.
Here's my first statement, all right? NBC Sports Network, I don't know if we have that clip, but NBC Sports Network on the game-winning goal crowned Erickson Ek the hero, right? He's the hero. It's a 1-0 victory. My statement is Erickson Ek was not the hero on that final play. Marcus Foligno was the hero on that final play. And let the Hockey Whisperer break it down X's and O's style for all of you non-elite hockey minds like himself, okay?
Yes.
So Vegas wins the faceoff in their own zone. I'm actually watching the play again here, so I can sort of give you the play-by-play, I'm watching it, right? So Vegas wins the face-off in their own zone. Foligno speeds across the front of the net, across Marc-Andre Fleury, and pokes the puck away, essentially blowing the whole thing up in Vegas's own zone. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, from there it kind of became a Plinko hockey goal that I'm not going to make fun of. Patrick Roycey would. So it was very much a hockey goal. Erickson Ek, right place, right time. He finds a skate, it goes in, but that doesn't happen if you don't get the workmanlike effort from Foligno sprinting across the front of the net to poke that puck away and blow it all up. So Erickson Ek, congratulations, right place, right time, you're a wonderful player. Foligno was the hero of that final play.
Oh, the Whisperer's back.
Here he is.
In full voice, too. Monday morning in full. So good to have the Whisperer. I feel like the Whisperer has not been here in like 6 years.
Yeah.
The Whisperer was very much damaged by the previous playoff era of Wild Hockey.
Yes.
He was very scarred.
He had to seek counseling.
He thought that his contract was going to run a little deeper into those playoffs, and his work got cut short.
Yep.
But the Whisperer loves this team and loves that they're back in the mix and loves that they are tough-minded enough to take that many bites at the apple, and Marc-Andre Fleury is just standing on his head. I will say real quick, he stood on his head a bunch. He also over-exaggerates than most goalies.
He sells.
Like,
it's great.
Come on,
he
bro.
Sells.
Come on, dude.
No, no, dude. That's
let's,
the
let's
old.
Calm it down.
No,
just a little.
No, that's the old. That's the love old. It. That's the old love school it. Goalies in my youth used to do that constantly.
Here, he catches it in front of him and then sprawls to the ground.
Yes, you know, just, I tweeted this. I tweeted this, and it's absolutely true. The exaggerated goalie save and the batting stance need to both come back. Like, it's all formulaic now. Like, my positioning is so good that I made this. No! Showcase the save. It's for television. The replay looks better if you showcase it. Batting stances, right? Like, now, everyone stands the same. I mean, they're all boring vanilla.
It's those damn Tommy Mansky videos with Fred McGriff from the 90s. Yes. That just got everyone with the same stance.
There was a guy that played goal for the Capitals, and then when I was a kid watching the North Stars for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mike Palmateer, who would do that? He was absolutely the best at showcasing. And, like, he would make the save. And then while, like, just before he fell, he would keep his balance for the extra second and then fall backwards. Oh, it was so great. And
here, I feel like, go ahead.
Oh, no. And
you're
on one. The last thing, no, it's great. The last thing that Fleury does that I love is, and the Wild actually bit on this time and time again yesterday, he gives them some glove side room on purpose, knowing that he can flick his glove up, right? So like his positioning is probably very, very slightly off on purpose.
He willing to give up an extra goal glove side if he winds up in the Sports Center top 10 for having his glove in the right place at the right time?
No, he's so confident that his glove is still so quick at the age of 36 that he's willing to show you space that you think exists. Because keep in mind, these guys as shooters can all put the puck exactly where they want. Like, they're not just winding up and shooting and like, I hope it goes somewhere. They've got a really good idea of exactly where they're trying to put that puck. And so Fleury's trying to show them just a little incy-bincy room there. Oh, you got some room on the glove side, and then bang.
Well, actually, you've actually hit on the Hockey Whisperer's second statement, and then he'll get out of the way and let the Hockey
Whisperer, we're glad to have you back. Quit apologizing.
Back. So, Marc-Andre Fleury, because he is flashier with the over-exaggeration of his saves, I think generated a little bit more excitement. Mm-hmm. At least the NBC Sports Network crew, like they popped more for the Fleury saves than for the Talbot saves. Yeah. But Talbot, the statement is, Talbot was the better goalie in that game. But he's not as flashy. Like, he was just well positioned more often in that game, and made saves look more routine because he's not adding the sizzle at the end all the time. But we're just watching, maybe Declan has the stats. It just seemed like Cam Talbot fended off so many high danger chances in that game. He was wonderful, and that's part of the reason why you brought him in on a multi-year contract, is for a performance like that in game one. So. My statement is, Marc-Andre Fleury, congratulations, you got the sizzle. Cam Talbot was the steady, 42 saves or whatever it wound up being at the end.
19 in the first period. Absolutely. You're 1,000% correct, yeah.
Yep. He's back, boys. The Hockey Whisperer is just
so good to have the Whisperer back.
Can't wait for that Game 7 overtime winner from Kevin Fiala in a week and a half.
If you say it's going to happen, Whisperer, it's going to happen. So I'm going to build off your second statement with an impromptu statement that I didn't think of until right now. It's this one. Do you still all want to chant Dubes every time Devin Dubnyk stops a puck that's been shot from center ice? Cam Talbot, I mean, Phil, how long
center ice?
How long did we talk about through the years? Like, and I know it's considered luck by some, but the fact that a goaltender can flip a series and win you a game, and in fact at times probably win you a series, and that the Wild for years has never had that guy. Like, Dubnyk was never that guy. There was always the weird goal that somebody would take a what looked like a harmless shot, and then it would hit something, and then it would pinball off the boards, and then it would pinball off a helmet. And Dubes,
he was regular season hot goalie, is what he
was.
He was regular season hot.
But playoff wise, we never said, man, he won you even close to a series, because in fact they simply didn't. What we saw, as the Whisperer pointed out yesterday from Cam Talbot, is why you signed him, and it's also what you need. If you are going to win a series, you are going to have periods where your team does not play great. And the Wild came out and did not look good. And the Golden Knights look fantastic. And yet your goaltender stopped 19 shots and held you in that game. Because with Dubnyk, I guarantee you guys, you're down 3-rip, 4-rip, and the game is done, okay? So that's what we've been talking about while everyone was chanting, Dubs! Like he's some type of bleeping hero because, he got hot in January. This is why Bill Guerin said, we're flipping the damn script and we're going to try a different goaltender because this is what you need to win a series. Without Cam Talbot, you are down 1-rip right now, no question.
Now, I don't know, and you guys would know more than I would, but I don't know that he has a major track record of certainly not stealing series in his career.
No, he does not.
He's a good goalie. He does have a few great performances in the playoffs against various teams. He also has a couple heartbreakers. There was a game in 2017 in the playoffs. This must have been like the second round of the playoffs against Anaheim. And he made 60 saves in an overtime loss against the Ducks. Gave up like 3 or 4 goals in that game. But so he's never stolen a series, but he's definitely done this, and he has a handful of shutouts and great performances in the playoffs. So we'll see if he can add to his resume.
Yeah, I believe he's now just the one of like 2 or 3 goalies who have now posted 3 shutouts for 3 different teams in the postseason. So he's posted a shutout for the Wild in the playoffs, the Flames, and I believe the Oilers. So he definitely is. He's tested. He's playoff tested for sure.
Yeah, interesting.
My statement basically goes right into Judd's, and it's this is exactly what we've been talking about. That is my statement. It's exactly what we have all been discussing on what the Wild have been trying to build over this last year. You had your goaltending issues last season, and goaltending is a volatile position. It was so bad last year it was costing the Wild games. The Wild had a better performance in front of them, and their goalies were holding them back last season. So what did you do? You went out and you found Cam Talbot. You were kicking the tires on possibly acquiring Marc-Andre Fleury. There was rumors about that. But Fleury makes about $6.5 million. He's 36 years old. Instead, Bill Guerin goes to Cam Talbot on a much cheaper deal, and your goaltending becomes better. It's not world-beating. It's probably not on the same level as someone like Fleury and Robin Leonard, who are possibly Vezina candidates, and they won the Jennings Trophy this year for Vegas.
Yep.
But it was improved. You have guys like Joel Eriksson Ek scoring big-time goals. His 20th goal, 21st goal if you count the regular season. He's the one who shows up in the overtime for you. Ryan Hartman, for God's sakes, was unbelievable. And Fleury just had his number all game long. And then the Kaprizov effect, who also dovetails perfectly into Ryan Hartman's game. I mean, he's the reason Ryan Hartman had about 7 grade A chances yesterday. It wasn't because Ryan Hartman was in the right place, right time necessarily. It was because Kirill Kaprizov drags that much attention and was able to feed Hartman. So you have all these pieces working well. You've turned the corner from the furious rally stages, from the Koivu and Stahl and Parisi stage. You now are entering the new phase of Wild hockey, and we at least have another 5. We have at least up to a 5th game of this playoff series. This is what we've been talking about.
Thank God.
That's
it's
my
over.
Statement.
I'm so happy.
Yes.
It's so nice to have that collection gone for the most part.
There's just a different, and who knows, like maybe I wouldn't get too presumptuous and excited about Minnesota sports, like turning a championship corner. I'll believe it when I see it, but there's a different feel for this team.
Oh, yeah.
And even, maybe this is confirmation bias, but even that clip that we played off the beginning where Dean Evason saying they didn't need any reinforcement. They know what to do. They just keep coming at you. They're skilled. They're confident. Mm-hmm. And it always kind of felt like previous Wild teams always needed external motivation of some kind, right? They needed to be out of the playoff mix with 2 months to go, and then they'd rally, right? Or they needed Mike Yeo to break a stick over the boards in practice and yell at them, or like it was always, I don't know, you're always like poking and prodding them to play at their peak capabilities. And it just kind of feels like this team, in this small sample that we've seen this season and then one playoff game, they just play like that because that's who they are.
Right. Yes. Bill Guerin saw that, and thank God he was finally the guy that basically, because it started with to his credit, Fenton, but I think Guerin saw 1 year of that team and said, this doesn't work, which is what we've been saying for how long? Like, if they had listened to us 4 years back, Phil, this would have come sooner, but they didn't listen to us.
Yeah, and a side note, Zach Parise was a healthy scratch in that game yesterday.
Oh, I got a statement about that.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
It's your show, too.
Yeah, your show, too. You're on the name. You're second, but you're on the name. technically third if the ampersand. You can count that too, actually. So
the ampersand counts?
I think so.
Then I'm out of here.
We should let the ampersand have some say in statements.
Well, why doesn't he have a statement? Or she. It could be a she.
Could be a she.
I don't know. You know what?
Could she mow the lawn for me?
Could be gender neutral?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Guess what I bought yesterday? Or actually, Dawn did. New lawnmower. But that's another story.
I think people want this. The sequel to that story.
We'll get it this week.
All right. Here's my statement. Scratching Zach Parise in game one of the playoffs and playing Nick Bjugstad as your fourth line right wing was the right move. And here's why. Bjugstad ultimately does bring more speed. Zach in that game yesterday would have been hopelessly behind the plays. And Bjugstad also can be used as much or as little as you want. He can play any role, and there's not going to be, well, we're going to have to talk to his agent after the game. We're going to have a discussion. How did you feel about that, Zach? Are you okay with that? Putting him on the shelf for now is a great move for both the team on the ice, just from a speed standpoint and the type of game and flow that we're going to have in this series, and it's important off the ice as well. Nick Bjugstad fits the role that they want. If Parise, here's, I think, the cold, harsh reality. If Zach Parise can't be a top six guy, I don't know that it's super productive to have him play. And certainly if he can't be a top nine, which he can't. And you know what I think? And it didn't blow up and it wasn't a mess. I think a lesson was learned. And if this is the case, I applaud Dean and Bill from the fact that they demoted Koivu. If you recall, in the bubble playoffs last year, to a fourth line. And I mean, this was Mikko Koivu, who had been he was the captain of the team. And he did it, and I thought he played okay. But the fact is, I think they decided it was too big of just, oh my God, he's a fourth liner. Oh my God, and I'm sure he complained privately. That's why I think the scratching of Parise overall makes sense.
The agent thing, I feel like we need more context there, but that rubbed me the wrong way last week. And it's Mike Russo reporting, and he's as plugged into the organization and Parise as anyone, so he's clearly getting it from the people that are involved. And just for there to have to be any sort of come to Jesus meeting involving an agent before the playoffs, like, dude, what? Just chill.
And you're okay? Just scratched.
Just chill.
Like you're just not playing.
Yeah, it's fine. Just be a team leader. All right, Declan?
Yeah, I have one more. It's please, for the love of God, move up Nico Sturm and bump Rask down. this was an atrocious game.
Now my DMs are going to blow up again.
Atrocious game from Victor Rask yesterday. 12 and a half minutes of play. I'm not going to use Corsi. I'm going to use Fenwick. So the difference between Corsi and Fenwick. Fenwick does not account for blocked shots. Corsi does. So if you have a shot blocked, never got on track, or never even hit close to the goal, why should we count that? So that's where Fenwick is a difference.
Well, you fired a shot. You pulled the trigger.
Yeah. Doesn't work out very well. A Fenwick of 12.5%, which means he was being outshot 87% of the time when he was on the ice yesterday. That's the worst number of any player. Now, Fiala,
maybe he's playing with bad teammates. Maybe he's LeBron and he's playing with a bunch of Matthew Dellavedovas.
And
maybe you should blame his teammates.
His two teammates, Fiala and Johansson, second and third.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah, Fiala's a scrub.
They were both
Jason Tyner.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Put some respect on Tyner's 300 batting average. Okay,
stop.
That's a different conversation. I don't want to get into a Jason Tyner statement. We could have
all
that another
of you
day.
Short, skinny folks need to stick together. Okay, Declan.
Jason Tyner. Billy Hamilton was a stud for the
Billy
White
Hamilton
Sox.
Billy Hamilton was good in that series.
I love singles,
you short, fast
hitters.
Skinny guys. Just stop.
But back to the Wild. Look, Johansson's a playoff performer. Johansson has been on teams like the Caps and the Bruins, and he showed up in the big time of the postseason. Kevin Fiala, even last year in the play-in, scored a couple big-time goals, and even he had a good chance at getting one yesterday. But when you're playing with Victor Rask, who can't keep up with him, and Nico Sturm, who I thought noticeably had a very strong game, you saw his speed throughout the course of the game, move him up, it will only benefit Fiala and Johansson. And Rask playing on the fourth line with Bjugstad and Bonino, I believe, which was the fourth line yesterday, that's still going to be fine. That's not going to hurt you that much. You should be elevating Fiala and Johansson's game, and putting someone like Nico Sturm on that is going to be a good news, or could be a good thing for the Wild.
So why don't they?
Because
what is the...
Because Dean trusts, in some weird way, he trusts Rask more. Like, he thinks that he won't make the wrong play. I think Dean is very afraid And it's weird because, like, Sturm is on the penalty-killing thing, so it's not like he does not play. He does.
Yeah.
But Dean has some weird faith in Rask not to screw up and to have, like, a veteran savvy. It's very – I got the Grey comp. It's very Guardy-like with players. He's very Guardy. Rask is like a Guardy guy. You don't understand. Rask battles his tail off, and we're all like, what are you talking about? And he's like, "You can I talk to you privately for a second? You don't know what Victor Rask does." It's a very Guardy thing. And it's weird because you know, Dean's done a great job, and there are very few things about the job that he's done that you can question. But I can confidently say that, one, I agree with Dex, and two, I think there's a snowball's chance in hell that what Dex suggested is going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's just this bizarre... I love Victor Rask. He walks naked through the room after losses, so and everyone...
So he's Mike Redmond? Is that what he is?
But I like Mike. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a weird... I'm trying to think of a weird sort of
Matt
fringe.
Tolbert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guardy used to put Matt Tolbert as the number two hitter. He was just kind of a spastic. Like, he could play shortstop and second base, but, like, he wasn't good. You know, he wasn't a major leaguer, but he was a grinder and a good guy.
Okay.
He could make the routine plays, right? That was him.
There's
Nick Punto,
comp.
Too, but Nick Punto had a couple really good seasons.
Yeah, at least Punto was good.
Like, Nick Punto hit 300 one season. And by the way, game two tomorrow night. See if the Wild can jump up 2-0 on the road before coming back home. How many fans are they allowing for game three?
I think four.
I'd have to look. Yeah, that sounds right.
Four? It's bumped up a little bit.
That sounds right, yep.
Okay. But what a fun – okay, one more statement, and we can get to other stuff, because KG got in the Hall of Fame. That was one of the most fun, scoreless hockey games.
100%.
It was – I mean, yes. My God, there were like great. 70 shots on goal in regulation, and it wasn't just dump and chase for 2.5 hours. It was like spectacular saves and action and stars in open ice with – you know, no defenseman in front of them. It felt like kind of a 4-3 type flow of the game, and it was scoreless. And so, shout out to fun hockey for 2.5 hours.
Playoff hockey,
nobody,
man.
Nobody scored.
Playoff. In fact, we had 4 games in 2 days.
Yep.
3 went to OT, and the one that didn't, which was Tampa and the Panthers, might have been the best game of them all, and it ended on a breakaway by Tampa Bay late. I mean, that weekend, it's every year you forget the jump and play. Like, playoffs are fun in every sport, but there is no jump and play like this sport. It goes from being, oh, you know, that's good, decent game, to, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
Yep. So that was a blast. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah.
So many other things to get to. Let me throw this one out because it comes with a soundbite here. We have a Kevin Garnett from Saturday. Yep. Let's do it.
To the Timberwolves organization, to Kevin McHale, who's here. Thank you, Kev. Thank you, Flip. Rest in peace. For teaching me, for helping me, Sam Mitchell, to being a constant brother, Sam Cassell, being an annoying ass in my ear all these years, to Gary Trent, the biggest piece of work I know, to Troy Hudson, Trent Hassel, real friends that I have today. My only regret with Minnesota is that I didn't get to bring a championship, but... like I said, I look forward to rebuilding Minneapolis, and I wanted to say thank you to the city and to the state. Thank you, Minnesota.
That was KG getting inducted. He was the leadoff hitter at the Hall of Fame induction, the Basketball Hall of Fame. And so his comment about rebuilding Minneapolis, now I know that he's been donating a lot of money, and he's been, since the George Floyd murder, he's been involved financially. But it left some people to wonder, does he mean something more than that? Does he know something, or is he just talking about literally rebuilding from some of the things that happened a year ago? But my statement is, especially after watching that, and it's kind of emotional. You grow up like my age. I grew up KG and Randy Moss. I grew up in that era, and they were my favorite players growing up. So my statement is more of a call to action for the new ownership group. A-Rod and Mark Lowry, please fix this relationship. It should honestly be the first thing, because listen, if Glenn's going to be around for a couple of years showing you the ropes, you know, you'll learn everything you need to learn. The one thing he can't teach you is how to repair the relationship with Kevin Garnett. And so whether it's bringing him in as a sliver of ownership, as a minority owner, or giving him some sort of presence in the front office. He doesn't have to run the team. Like, no, I don't think that's a good idea, but please fix this relationship with Kevin Garnett and bring him back into the fold here with the Timberwolves.
And this, again, is why I am so perplexed and confused by the whole Glenn's going to stick around for 2 years thing.
Dude, get lost.
This is reason number one. Like, literally. Like, there are a plethora of reasons for Glenn to step aside and be, you know, I don't know, give him a night before a game or something. That's all great. But the Garnett thing to me is one of your top agenda things of why Glenn needs to go. Because are you going to wait? Because KG, I don't think, is coming back here until Glenn is out. So I don't think he can be like, well,
He didn't name him.
Right, exactly. So
he omitted Glenn Taylor and Ray Allen from his, whatever, 15 or 20 minutes.
Ray Allen thing's incredible. Yeah. But anyway, the thing with Glenn is this is reason number one for him just to be done and move on and get Garnett back here, get him involved. I bet you Garnett comes back the second Glenn is gone and you can get the 21 up. In fact, that leads to my next statement, which I think I have hit on an idea that might bring Phil Mackey to tears. This struck me like a bolt of lightning. I think I was sitting in the press box watching another exciting Twins game on Saturday, and this struck me as an idea between the Vikings and Wolves that would leave people from the late 90s, early 2000s absolutely just a puddle, but it'd be great. We need the Vikings and Wolves to work together to retire the numbers 21 and 84 during a weekend on which the Wolves play on a Saturday and the Vikings at home on a Sunday. It would be KG and Moss weekend. It would be absolutely perfect. The generation that grew up with them would love it. Both of them deserve to have their numbers retired ASAP, in my opinion, and they're friends. So what would be more fun than to have Moss be with KG when KG gets his 21 retired, and then the next day at US Bank Stadium, 84 retired, KG is there with Moss. How much fun would that be?
That would be a blast. And really, I mean, it's funny. You might wonder, well, why hasn't that happened for both of those guys yet anyways? Well, the Vikings are just sort of limited until now that they've expanded the number. You know, you can wear whatever number you want now, right? You can be a left tackle wearing number -4. Like, it's not quite that aggressive, but they just like they can't retire. They've already got a bunch of numbers retired, right? So they're more of a Ring of Honor organization than a retired number. With the Timberwolves, the only reason is, oh, I don't know, you've alienated the most popular and relevant and only relevant star in franchise history. And I get that some of it's on KG. He is a cantankerous, difficult to deal with person behind the scenes. There's a lot of stories about him treating people poorly behind the scenes over the years with the Wolves. So he is not – I think what people view him as a basketball player and on the court and just the beloved memories we have of him, there's a lot of people behind the scenes that don't have that same opinion of him off the court. So we have to say that just so it's not all on Glenn Taylor. But I think a Mark Cuban-type owner, a Jerry Buss back in the day, they make it work. They make it work. You keep the relationship.
And Moss was a jerk, too. These are two of the greatest players to ever play, or in KG's, in his defense, he's the greatest player easily to play for the Wolves, and it's not even close. Like, I don't know where the second guy is, but it's not close. Moss is one of the greatest players and changed the game to play football. So, yes, they're cantankerous. They could be jerks. Guess what? I don't care. I didn't like either one that much personally. I don't care. As a sports fan and a person who loves sports, they both deserve this. And in the Wolves case, I will say this. KG Prickly, right? I mean, you know that KG's going to be a difficult guy a lot of the time. Think about this. Glenn alienated him twice. And how he did it is very clear. Like, he traded him to Boston, which KG didn't want. He resisted. And he finally traded him, which was great. The break is clean. And then, Phil, the next year, he basically says, KG tanked. And then they bring him back and Flip, God rest his soul, Flip does all of that work to bring back this old man at the time and still one of the greatest returns in Minnesota sports. And you have finally smoothed over this. I mean, Flip just had done so much work. and you can't find a way to keep him happy?
Dude, imagine after,
like, that's
after
on Glenn.
10 years of KG dominating and you failing to put a roster around him, yes, for the majority of those years, right? And actively getting 4 first-round picks removed from your organization's stash because you signed a dumbass Joe Smith contract off the books, right? And then at the end of a miserable season, and KG takes 7 games to rest or whatever, like, he was just mentally and physically fried, and you say that he tanked it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, people forget about that. Yeah. You know what I think it's time for Glenn to do? Ride off into the sunset. So maybe if you're Glenn Taylor, now that you've sold the team and you can ride off into the sunset on a Harley, a sport bike, a metric cruiser, maybe you should go to DennisKirk.com, where there's 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, clothing and helmets as well. We can get Glenn some biker clothing. Order before 8 p.m. and they ship the same day. And shipping is free for orders over $89, all right? I think Glenn can afford
Glenn
something that costs $89. I don't know if we need to see that.
Do we need to see Glenn and Chaps at Center Court, Target Center?
Just a leather jacket.
Okay.
Just a leather jacket and a helmet. All right. The best in the business, DennisKirk.com. Everything you need for your ride off into the sunset at DennisKirk.com. All right. Back to Declan.
I have a more weekend observation statement. If you guys have more Wolves statements, hit them. But otherwise, I can give you mine.
I got a Twins one, but I don't have a Wolf.
Okay. Actually, so. No, perfect.
I'll get you a Wolves one at some point, but it has nothing to do with KG, okay. So you go ahead.
Actually, I think mine will dovetail maybe into a Twins one. It's my statement is naps are essential. So naps are essential. And on Saturday, we'd played 18, right bright and early, though.
This is like a 20-person bachelor party you were at,
21.
Right?
21 oh dudes. 21 guys. And we were the first tee time, obviously, off the course. Play for 4.5 hours, drinks start flowing. I come back. Actually, a lot of people come back from the golf course, and some people took some naps. Took like a quick 45-minute power nap, just a quick one, in, out.
That's key.
I'm back. It's like now 2:30, 3 o'clock. Everyone's outside, having a good time drinking. So I start catching up. And then at about 6 o'clock, after about 4 hours of day drinking, I hit my wall. And I know my wall.
Wait, did you take a second nap?
I took a second nap.
Whoa, dude!
6:15.
Whoa!
At smart.
At 6:15.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, and Phil very will love smart. This line.
That's a legendary play.
They said, the way you were sleeping, because like, I was kind of in one of the main bedrooms where like one of the bathrooms is, so like you had to walk by the bed to see me. They said I was laying in there like I was Undertaker in a casket. Like I was legit zonked out. And I woke up at about 8 o'clock, so about like a little less than a 2-hour nap. And let's go to the bar. Here we go. And yeah, I was ready to go after that. So yes, naps are
good
essential.
For you.
Two naps in on Saturday to keep up. And then yesterday, was a rough.
That day, is, but. You know, you have been an innovative content producer at Score North. And I think you've innovated in the way that you have pushed seltzer into the Twin Cities market. I have never heard of the two nap day drinking
couple naps
strategy. And I love it. I love it.
Because ordinarily, my experience with what you did in my attempts were nap two was I was basically done.
Yeah.
So like I might lay down with the intention of, oh, nap two, I'll just sleep for a little while. It turned into, oh, my God, it's midnight. So that is impressive. Now, did you set an alarm to end nap two, or did you just wake up?
I woke up like an hour and 40 minutes later.
Oh, see, that's real. Yeah. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
Did anyone else take two naps?
Yes. We discussed this at brunch on Sunday morning, even before we left. It was like, who else? Because Declan, Declan took two naps. Because they took one look at me about 6 o'clock. And I think one buddy's like, dude, you need to go to sleep like right now. This isn't gonna work.
How bad were you?
I did a dizzy bat. Do you know what dizzy bat is, Judd?
No idea.
Dizzy bat
is that where you put your bend over and put your forehead on a bat and turn
spin,
around?
You fill a wiffle ball bat of your beverage.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Wait, put the beverage in the wiffle ball?
Yeah, like
bat?
you cut the top of the bat off. So like there's it's like a cup.
See, I did not know this.
Fill
part.
The bat, and then for how many seconds it takes you to chug it, that's how many spins you have to do on the bat.
Oh my God.
And then you have to swing. I took one after I had seven, so I had to do 7 swings, so it took me 7 seconds. And by the time I got in my batting stance, I fell right on my keister and I almost fell down the hill. But I got back up and then I hit it. It was fine. It was fun.
What a performance, man.
Thank you.
I got to say, like, now that I'm in my – I turned 36 later this week, and I think, like, comparing now to 10 years ago, you're in your late 20s, right?
Yeah.
27, 28.
28.
And Judd's in his early 50s now, and so you go through these evolutions of what you can handle. And I remember in college, like, I could get up for a Gopher football game, kegs and eggs at 6 or 7 o'clock, right. Drink your brains out until an 11 o'clock kickoff. And then, like, after the game's over, you go bar hopping around, like, no nap, and you're just drinking from 7 a.m. until 2 in the morning, and then you wake up the next day like nothing happened, right? If I start drinking, if I have a Bloody Mary at brunch now, or, like, two mimosas or something, 100% need a nap by, like, 2 or 3 o'clock. And so I try to avoid starting drinking until later in the day, because once I start drinking, I have like a 4 or 5 hour clock on me before I get super tired. And that's where I'm at now in my mid-30s. It's very pathetic and sad.
It gets worse, man.
Yeah, I know.
Not bad.
I know that what I did on set, like, I only have maybe a couple more years of the two-nap lifestyle.
Here's what I don't get, though.
A full slugger.
So, like, the two naps, I respect. More power to you. The drinking, I respect. The dizzy bat thing. Eliminate the games. You don't need to do that.
Games are the best, dude.
No, they're not. No,
Judge wrong on this. Judge wrong on this.
Bunch of flip cup. We ran the table on flip cup on Friday.
See,
it was great.
No.
I love me some flip cup.
No. I know.
Also, flip cup shows you which of your friends can handle pressure and which ones melt.
100%.
You know? It's all on you. Hey, you got a 3-cup lead. You just have to, you're the last flipper. You
except there's one problem there. There's one problem. Because you're technically right, but my experience is this. Dude bros do flip cup a lot in practice. And so, like, a guy like me who's like, games are stupid, I do it. And I'm like, let's just stop. Let's just drink. And dude bro's like, no, man, we got to do more flip cup. And they're practiced at it. No, here's the thing. Dude bro, you're a spectator in life. Accept it and let's go drink.
Wow, dude.
I mean, you're seriously going to be, the odds are so high that you're going to be sitting behind a desk in 10 years or in 5 years and looking at the clock, okay? So let's just pretend like it's happy hour now and not do the damn flip cup.
That's his moment of glory right there.
No, I know.
Challenge you
and I'm trying
to a flip cup.
And I'm trying to say, achieve better than that, dude bro.
Amazing.
I want better.
I gotta
than
say,
that.
Man.
Okay.
Wow, the two nap. Yeah, the second nap usually just means your day is over.
That's
and
impressive,
not for Declan,
Dex.
Man.
Nope. Yeah,
three drinking.
Bow down to Declan.
I do know. Like I said, it's the limit. You gotta know your limit.
Still,
and I can put, despite my frail, tiny little teenage size, I can put back drinks, but I know the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know the ceiling
Thanks,
of what
Jason
I can
Tyre.
And can't do. You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Hey, we're of the 21 guys out there. Anybody rocking the PXG clubs?
Yes, there's a couple PXG PXGs.
Club?
Yeah, and we had a couple PXG
All
swag
right.
out there. Yeah, we did.
Wow.
Yes, we did.
So PXG Minneapolis is a golfer's paradise. So the two different clubs to look at. The Gen 4 clubs are the best clubs that PXG has ever made, which is saying something. And then the 0 to 11 clubs, also a full line of high-performance clubs, packed with PXG technology, priced a little bit more within reach. So wherever your game is at, even if you just want to look good with some of the spring-summer apparel that just arrived, check them out at PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center and find out more at PXG.com/Minneapolis. I got to throw this Twins one out here. Saturday, I'm just trying to think back. I've been watching baseball I'm 36. I remember watching baseball for the first time in like 1990. And so I've consciously been a baseball fan for over 30 years. And I'm thinking about all the great moments. I didn't watch the Kirk Gibson home run live, but I've seen it on tape a million times. I remember the Joe Carter walk-off home run to win a World Series in 93. Just so many great legendary home runs. And my statement is Miguel Sano's home run on Saturday, right up there with the greatest, most clutch home runs of all time. I don't know why Judd is so down on it. He missed her cold bucket of water on Twitter. What a great moment for the franchise, for Miguel. It erases everything that's happened so far this season. He proved all the haters wrong with that home run to win the game on Saturday. And I just feel like everyone needs to apologize now to Miguel Sano for doubting him. That's my long statement.
You know what? I've had an epiphany, Phil. You're exactly right. I'd like to apologize.
Never mind the fact that they kicked the ball around for 3 hours yesterday.
And
soiled themselves.
And the fact that the big guy, when he hit that ball off of Diekman on Saturday put his bat down and jogged to first base, not because he thought I hit a home run, but because he thought that's a pop out. And I looked at the flags, and Phil, get this. So the wind blows sometimes, and it was blowing out to right field, and the ball got up in the jet stream, and it kept carrying. It was incredible. But you're right. You're right. The slump is done. I'd like that.
They won a game. It's their seventh win in like a month. So
to lead to my next statement here, because I think we have a, I think that that home run and the reaction, much more importantly, the reaction to said home run, I think serves as a moment for Sports Dad to come in here and lay the law down, okay?
Imagine how great it must have felt for Miguel to hit that home run. That wasn't my first thought. My first thought was, wow, finally, dude, you're making $12 million. Welcome to the season, buddy. You're only buried 12 games in the standings below 500 6 weeks in, but congratulations, you found the ballpark for the first time this year. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so my statement is this from Sports Dad. And I'm talking to you people out there, okay? And you know what? If you agree with Sports Dad, that's fine. But it's still going to help you. That home run and the reaction to it was exactly what this show has been talking about for the better part of probably the last 5 to 6 months now when it comes to we settle for anything. That home run and the reaction of Minnesota fans is exactly why we don't win championships here. It's exactly why there's we complain and whine and moan and mock at times, but we don't demand excellence. We celebrate mediocrity. We celebrate a home run that is basically gets caught up in a jet stream. And we think, this is it. It's all turning around now. We can all go home happy. Twins win. The Twins win. Think about it. It's why we celebrate Kirk. It's why we, when's the last damn time that anybody, including some of the biggest critics in this town, when's the last time we demanded excellence? When's the last time that we said, you know what? The Wild won a playoff game, and that was awesome. It was really cool. Goaltender played great. Now let's see a lot more. Let's see a deep run. Like, this is a perfect example. And I'm guilty, too, probably. We're all talking about, well, if they can get past the Golden Knights, and I mean, perhaps they can. And I'm predicting they won't, but that's not the point. The point is, why don't we say you should make a run? Why don't we say it's about damn time that the Twins won a game and Miguel Sano hit a home run? Why is it always, this might be it, this might be the it? Why are we so Pollyanna? Ladies and gentlemen, there's no reason to be. Like, I know you're conditioned by a lot of people who do the same jobs that we do to celebrate almost anything that's not complete abject failure. But that home run crystallized for me how we accept things and are like, that was just such a great moment. No, it wasn't. It was overdue. Phil's right.
I just tweeted, greatest, most important home runs of my lifetime. Kirk Gibson, 1988 World Series. Joe Carter, 1993 World Series. Miguel Sano, Saturday afternoon. Now, I'm reminded by the first comment. What about Kirby Puckett's home run in 91? Honestly, I thought the degree of difficulty for Sano was probably more difficult on Saturday. Just took that pitch in. I mean, Puckett pulled his. You pull a home run. Sano went oppo, so I'm going to put Puckett fourth on that list.
Move over David Freese. Miguel Sano has a word to say, you know. Move over David Freese.
We'll see you tomorrow night.
Anyway. One more Timberwolves note here for you guys, all right? So they just blasted the Mavericks yesterday. And some of these games down the stretch, right, teams are – there's like Boston has like one starting player left. Everyone else is having surgery or injured. So like that game a couple days ago. But my statement is – I love that the Timberwolves have throttled down to end their season. And they've won a bunch of games. And yeah, they might be sort of just down the stretch, meaningless games. And ultimately, they still finished, what, 23-49, I want to say? But I would rather see this group gel the way that it has and Ant Edwards turn into a superstar the way that he has and Towns be used the right way with what Chris Finch has installed as a coach than sit and beg for more losses on the 40% chance that they could get a top three pick, right? So you still have like a 30 to 35% chance of keeping your pick. and the nucleus that matters showed that they can win some games and play great offensive basketball down the stretch. So I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, you just like, you beat the Pistons and the Magic and all these teams that you're supposed to lose to. I love it. I'm here for it. And I'm with Gerson Rosas. Let the basketball gods and the chips fall where they may at this point.
But the follow-up to that is be in a position to make the playoffs next year. Like, take
get
this
to that
and
plan.
Spring,
get to the plan.
Exactly. And if anybody says the Western Conference, you can't. You know how tough that is? That's the point. But, I mean, that's what I'm talking about is now let's take this, and it's fine. If you win, great. But it's got a springboard. Like, it can't start. We can't be satisfied with, well, they got off to a tough start next year, and it's just the Wolves again. Like, at some point in time, let's get our expectations where they should be for sports. Like, do you think people in Boston are like, the Bruins suck this year. Wasn't that fun? You know, but I got to all the games, and I bought my Charlie Coyle jersey. No, they're not like that, ladies and gentlemen. This is a life-changing experience right now. We all need to go through it. Can I get in one more statement?
Oh, we have plenty of time. We have is
okay.
Time.
I'm going to shock you guys because as you both know, I told you during Royce's appearance on Friday, I was covering the Lynx game for the Pioneer Press on Friday night against the Phoenix Mercury. I have a WNBA statement to make, and Phil actually saw this when he went to, I believe it was the championship game against the Sparks as well. But here's my statement. This league has star players, because it does. Like, it's got some unbelievable talent. Like it's getting better and better, and the talented players are really good. It has a national TV contract, so it's taken seriously, and it should be, okay? And its officiating is a joke and an embarrassment to basketball. Not women, basketball. On Friday night, you guys, with 6.8 seconds left and the Lynx up by one, the Lynx lost the ball. And an official, I kid you not, this is not a joke, breathed into his or her whistle. But it didn't blow. It just breathed slightly. But it's triggered with a breath to stop the clock. Phoenix picks up the ball and goes down the floor. And I am watching the game in the building. And the clock is at 6.8. And Phoenix goes down the floor, and the clock is at 6.8. And Taurasi hits a three. Somebody finally realizes we stopped the clock. They then, I'm not joking about this, this is incredible, because, I mean, this league is taken seriously. They then had to go to a replay. But I found out in asking Cheryl Reeve after the game, there is no replay center. Like, they don't provide any of that. So the officials huddle around a monitor with a stopwatch. And twice try to time off on a stopwatch how much time passed. They decide it's 1.1 seconds, so the shot counts. And of course, the game is done then because, you know, for the most part, you're not going to get a great shot off. But the point is, like, we are all in, right, on women's sports, which is cool. This league, which is really good. ESPN shows it. ABC does. And so basically, the edict, and I agree with this is to be taken seriously. And you don't have a replay center. You have an official that breathed into a whistle but didn't blow it and stopped the clock. And then you're going to come back and tell me again, but this is to be taken as seriously as the NBA. Until you fix this, you got yourselves a problem that you need to fix.
I mean, how much of an extra expense is it, like, relative to all the money that the NBA and I get that the NBA is much, much more profitable in the TV deals and it's funding the WNBA, but is it that much more expensive every night to just have, like, a central hub with two people in a replay center somewhere? I don't know how many people it takes, I guess, but, we're not talking about
it's
$1 billion investment here, right?
Yeah, and you wouldn't have to pay them exactly a ton. But my point is, because what was the thing that you saw, Phil, in the championship game against the Sparks where there was a replay? Something happened.
I heard something ridiculously egregious where, like,
they were going to review a play and they didn't? Is that what it was?
I think there was a phantom foul or something happened. I don't remember the details. I just remember thinking, watching the game, oh my God, this is like the biggest game in WNBA history right now, and these officials can't live up to the moment. And Cheryl Reeve ripped the crap out of them after the game too, rightfully so.
Yes, and you know, she was more subdued. I mean, she was upset, but she was exactly right. She eventually said, they were guessing. Like, they were trying to sync up a replay to a stopwatch. Mm-hmm. They're guessing at that point. So anyway,
2021, man. You know, 2021.
But I mean, if you're going to do this seriously, then do it seriously. Because that's that is a beyond embarrassing problem to have.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. All right. Any final statements there? The double nap.
The double nap is legendary.
The show stealer here.
But today. I couldn't have done it. So like you're Gretzky. Because like I can say, oh yeah, double nap, yeah. I could do that. No, I couldn't.
Dude, I love
the second nap, I'm done. So you are like the Gretzky of drinking right now.
I need a nap if I'm doing a power.
Well, sure, one nap. But you did two.
I needed to. But that felt great.
Phil, could you have done two and gotten up the second time?
I don't know if I have the want to. I don't know if I have the drive for a second one.
That's why he's Gretzky.
Like for me, I feel like if we go and do some bouncing around ever on a weekend and we're drinking during the day, we either need to start at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon so that I can conk out by 9. Yeah. If we start earlier, I might get you a 2 o'clock nap that takes me to 3 or 4, and then I'm ready again. If it, you know, for Declan, he's gearing up to stay out till like midnight or 2 a.m.
Correct.
I just can't.
Yeah, but
can't
to get up after yet. To get up that quickly. But in your prime, could you have done the two naps and gotten up that quickly from nap two? Because in my prime, I would have still slept till at least 11.
I'll tell you, in my prime, I didn't need a second nap, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, wow, you came after Deck.
That's okay.
I was trying to praise him.
I said no.
You know, just because his name is not on the show doesn't mean that we should be doing that.
He's the ampersand. Declan is the ampersand. He's the glue that holds everything together.
I connect both the guys.
I've got one more statement. I've got one more. Just quickly. Matt Chapman, third baseman, Oakland Athletics. Wow. My statement is, if you want to see a clinic at third base, and you know, I mean, I know, you know, Josh Donaldson's really good defense. Okay, sorry.
He blew the game yesterday.
He did. But Matt Chapman is one of the few guys in baseball fielding his position who I'd probably buy a ticket to see him do it. And that arm, like, he gets a ball hit to him, and every time, unless it was probably a guy like Buxton, he stands there and pats the ball in his glove at least once because his arm is so strong. That catch he made against the tarp right before the foul ball by Arise hit the tarp when he pinch hit on Saturday was one of the most gorgeous catches I've seen. And the A's athletically in the field, that's how you win baseball games.
See what you did there. See what you did there.
Thank you very much. But that's how you win baseball games.
The A's athletically in the field.
Yes.
The Twins, in terms of what you do to lose a baseball game, well, there's messing up a rundown. That was a pretty brilliant base running play, though, too. Like, just take – it was – what's his name? He used to play for Texas. He was the shortstop. Elvis Andrews.
Andrews, that's right.
Yep. Yeah. And that was very minimal contact, but you can't give a base runner a chance to bump and fall to the ground like that.
That is super smart, though. It's a basketball play.
It was the right play. And then you had Josh Donaldson just absolutely dropping a TaylorMade out at second base and then staring at his glove and yelling at it like.
Which is the second time he's done that. The ball in Oakland that got stuck in his glove, they showed him. He was staring at his glove like his glove is somehow trying to screw him over.
Well, hopefully he can save up enough to get a new glove at some point. It'd be nice. And then, of course, Taylor Rogers throwing the wild pitch and having that ping pong around, like just a clown show. Just a clown show. Yeah. But hey, we don't need anything else. Now that Miguel Sano hit that home run,
we're back
on Saturday.
Baby.
Just a blast.
I don't think the rest of the season doesn't matter. He proved all the haters wrong. This team proved all the haters wrong.
Raise your standards, Minnesota. Yeah. Raise your expect greatness or you'll never get it.
Get out of the way, Aaron Boone, in game 7. David Freese, you got nothing on him. Miguel Sano
and
May 16th.
That's right. I should probably start listing some more of these home runs. Aaron Boone.
Maz
was a pretty good one, 1960.
Yeah.
I think Pujols had a big one against the Astros in like the NLCS, too. I think he also had a big one. Or maybe Jim Edmonds.
Now you're just throwing out names. It might have been Babe Ruth. I'm not quite sure.
Boone, Freeze, Puckett. But again, Sano went oppo. It's harder to go oppo. Yep. So I got to put those guys further down.
Yep.
All right. Hey, we are we're right. I think by the time people listen or watch this, I think we might be right around 20,000 total subscribers on the Purple Daily and Scornorth YouTube channel. So if you consume us that way, thank you. for pushing us up to 20,000 subscribers. And we'll be back tomorrow. So for maybe for tomorrow. So I was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning. They're doing it. They're going around to all the big markets. I know. Big time. Big time. And they asked who are the three most essentially famous or walk into a restaurant and yes, sir or ma'am, where can we seat you? Like kick someone out of the booth to seat them, famous current athletes or coaches in Minnesota. I gave them three. I want you guys to think on it and let me know who yours would be tomorrow. All right. Like who are the three faces a bunch of athletes walk up to a restaurant and these three get a seat in a full restaurant.
Can they all be rookies?
They could be. We touched on this.
That sounds like a joke too.
They were surprised by my number one. They were surprised by my number one.
I bet I know what they expect. I bet I know what they expected too. Yep. All right, perfect. That's awesome. Okay. Let's do it.
All right, Mackie and Judd, thanks for hanging out with us today. We'll see you guys tomorrow.